This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is John Pooker, professor in the Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy at Rutgers University. John's research focuses on walking and bicycling, and in particular on how American cities could learn from European policies to improve the safety, convenience, and feasibility of these non-motorized modes in the United States. John Pooker is here today to tell us what we can do in the United States to better promote bicycling as a form of transportation. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much.
Could you begin by reviewing for us the benefits of bicycling as a mode of transportation?
Well, it certainly is one of the most sustainable modes of transportation, together with walking, I would say. Walking and cycling are the most sustainable ways of getting around our cities. They cause virtually no air pollution whatsoever, virtually nothing in the terms of noise. They do not take up non-renewable resources. They're affordable by virtually everybody. They do not really cause much in the way of traffic dangers, and they also provide very valuable physical activity, which I think we really, really need here in the United States. I think every state in the country is suffering from an obesity epidemic, and all public health experts attribute this at least partly to our lack of physical activity. So I think walking and cycling are absolutely the perfect ways to get around our cities.
How does the use of bicycling and walking for transportation in the U.S. compare with Europe?
It's a lot less. In the United States, these are official government surveys. The latest survey we have for the United States is for 2001. Less than 1% of all trips in American cities are made by bicycle, and only about 6 or 7% are by walking. And that compares with levels of walking and cycling that are about 5 or 6 times higher than that in Europe. So, for example, in the Netherlands, 34% of all trips in cities are made by bicycle. In Denmark, it's about 20% of all trips by bike. In Germany, it's 12% of all trips by bike. In Belgium, it's about 10%. Sweden, 10%. Switzerland, 10%. In short, European countries have levels of cycling that are 10 to 20 times, even 30 times higher than that in the United States.
What types of people bicycle in Europe?
Everyone bicycles. And that is also a huge difference between bicycling in the United States and in Europe. In the United States, it's mainly sort of young men who are doing the bicycling. I mean, you will certainly find women bicycling, and you will find a few people who aren't young who are bicycling. But for the most part, you find young men bicycling in the United States, and it's mainly for recreation. In Europe, virtually everyone bicycles. I mean, at least in terms of sort of Northern Europe, Western Europe, and so forth, these countries I just mentioned, such as Germany, Scandinavia, Netherlands, Belgium, and so forth, where all age groups cycle. And in fact, in the Netherlands, a quarter of all trips made by those people who are over 75 years of age are by bike. Many Americans probably assume that, well, once you get older, you can't bicycle, and it's just not true. It's really astounding when you look at these European countries that when people get elderly, they actually start making a higher and a higher percentage of their trips by walking or cycling, and that gives them both independence, it gives them mobility, they don't have to depend upon their family or friends or neighbors to give them rides everywhere, and on top of all that, they're getting that extraordinarily valuable physical activity, which makes them healthier. And in fact, in each of these countries I've just mentioned, Germany and Denmark, the Netherlands, and Sweden and so forth, they have average expected lifetimes, healthy expected lifetimes of 2 to 4 years longer than Americans. And I am convinced that it is that physical activity, that daily physical activity just in the process of getting from point A to B, getting to things they need to reach on a daily basis, that physical activity is what's keeping them healthier and helping them live longer.
Perhaps we can go into more detail later, but would you give a brief overview of the underlying reasons that bicycling is more prevalent in Europe?
I think the main reason is that European countries and cities make much, much better provisions in terms of cycling facilities. That is, it has nothing whatsoever to do with our genes making Americans less able to cycle and Europeans more able to cycle. It is not something that's in our blood. It's a matter of the circumstances we're faced with. And in European countries and European cities, especially those countries I just mentioned, that you have incredibly convenient, safe, feasible, attractive facilities for cycling. So you have, let me just list a few of these kinds of facilities. You have extensive systems of bicycling lanes and paths. And just one example, in Berlin, Germany, they have over 1,000 miles of completely separate bike ways and bike lanes specifically for cyclists. That insulates them from the motor vehicles. It makes it safer, more convenient, and makes it more pleasant to cycle than it does in most American cities. Where in American cities, you'll find, and I'm sure you'll find it there in Seattle, you maybe find a really nice bike path here or there, or a really attractive bike lane here or there. But the problem with every American city, including Seattle, is that those bicycling facilities are not really linked up to form an integrated, comprehensive bicycling network that lets you get to every part of the city without having to fight the motor vehicle traffic on the roadways. And if you look at Northern Europe in particular, Scandinavia, Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, and so forth, almost every single city has a comprehensive, integrated network of cycling facilities. So, because they're separated from motor vehicle traffic, and even at the intersections, there's a completely separate set of bicycling sort of traffic signals, which give bicyclists an advanced green light. So bicyclists are already through the intersection before the cars even get to start. This makes it much safer, more convenient, and also, by the way, faster for cyclists compared to driving a car. And this is not the case in almost any American city. You're just not going to find those sorts of facilities. Another really important thing to make cycling safe and convenient, and that is traffic calming of neighborhoods. And what we mean by traffic calming is you introduce a series of alterations to the actual street infrastructure. So you might make a street narrower, you might introduce plantings into the street, put in speed humps or speed bumps, you can make sort of a zigzag kind of street. There's many, many different ways you can do this, but the point is, if you traffic calm your residential neighborhoods, and about almost 100% of European residential neighborhoods are traffic calmed, and that means you end up, by law also, with a maximum speed of 18 miles per hour. It's actually 30 kilometers per hour in these European cities, but that's equivalent to 18 miles per hour. And when you reduce motor vehicle traffic, those speeds, to that low, it makes those residential streets much, much, much safer, both for walking and for cycling and for kids playing in the street. So this combination of providing a truly extensive and integrated comprehensive network of cycling paths and lanes, providing special traffic signals at intersections, giving cyclists an advanced green light, giving them priority, and also, by the way, giving pedestrians priority at intersections, something that is almost never done here in the United States. And then on top of that, providing truly comprehensive traffic calming of residential neighborhoods. That reduces the air pollution in those neighborhoods, it reduces the noise in those neighborhoods, and it tremendously increases the safety of those neighborhoods. There have been studies done in European cities, very extensive studies, and what they find is sort of before and after studies, when they have traffic calm neighborhoods, it reduces fatalities and injuries to pedestrians and to cyclists by 70 to 80%. And that's another thing that virtually every European city does. They traffic calm virtually all their residential neighborhoods, plus they make extensive parts of their city centers totally car-free. No car travel at all, at least during most of the day. They allow deliveries with trucks and so forth at night. But during the day, the centers of many, many, many European cities and even middle-sized cities and towns are totally off-limits to cars. Again, what does this do? It makes those environments ideal, safe, attractive, and pleasant, both for walking and cycling. And by the way, what is the result of all of this? You know, I've talked about how much higher the levels of walking and cycling are in European cities. If you add walking and cycling together, what you find is 50 to 60% of all daily trips in European cities are either by walking or by cycling. In the United States, less than 10% of our daily trips in cities are by walking or cycling.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with John Pucher. professor in the Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy at Rutgers University. Our topic is what we can do to promote bicycling as a form of transportation in the United States. Would you compare the relative safety of bicycling in the U.S. and Europe in terms of the numbers?
Well, unfortunately, that is the biggest obstacle to cycling in the United States. It is much, much more dangerous to cycle in the United States than it is in Europe. It depends on the exact country you want to compare it to, but let's just take the Netherlands. Actually, the Netherlands has the safest cycling in Europe, maybe even in the world, but certainly in Europe. The Dutch have the safest cycling facilities. They have about one-tenth as many cycling fatalities and injuries per trip and per mile traveled as we do in the United States. So obviously it's a smaller country, but standardized for that. If you look at Germany, it's not quite as safe as the Netherlands, but it's certainly much safer than the United States. I would say it's about 3 to 4 times safer to cycle in Germany than it is in the United States, again, on a per-trip basis, per-kilometer basis. And just to let you know, it's not just that cycling is safer. Walking is also safer, and almost the same ratio. Per trip, per mile walked, it is 10 times safer to walk in the Netherlands than it is in the United States. And in Germany, it's 4 to 5 times safer to walk in Germany than it is in the United States, per trip and per mile. Now, the obvious consequence of this is because it is so much more dangerous to walk and to cycle in the United States, that is a major deterrent to Americans walking and cycling. And the important question, I guess, here is, well, why is it so much safer to walk and cycle in European cities? And the answer is that pedestrians and cyclists get real priority from A to Z in every aspect of public policy. So number one, as I mentioned previously, they get advanced green lights and total priority at intersections. So both cyclists and pedestrians are treated as being the most important way of getting around, and they are given the absolute top priority in every respect. They get the main right of way. They get priority in traffic signals. They get priority in every way in these European cities, in addition to which a fact that I mentioned before is you have in most of these European cities extremely extensive, integrated, coordinated systems of bikeways and also pedestrian facilities. You have wonderful sidewalks, crosswalks, auto-free zones, bike paths, bike lanes, and so forth. Lots and lots and lots of special provisions for both walking and for cycling, and they not only make walking and cycling more convenient, more pleasant and more attractive, but crucially, they make walking and cycling safer. And most people, and I think this also includes, I think, most Americans, if you ask most Americans, why do you not walk or why do you not cycle? They would respond, I'll bet in most cases, it's just not safe. And I think that's especially applicable to cycling, that most parents now don't want their kids to cycle. They think it's unsafe. Or people just on their own say, well, I don't want to go out there and cycle. It's just too unsafe. Well, the answer is it is, to some extent. It is unsafe, but it's not unsafe intrinsically. It is unsafe because most American cities, number one, do not devote the sorts of resources that are needed to building those bikeway, the bike systems, the bike paths, the bike lanes, putting in special bicyclist facilities at intersections, giving them advanced traffic signals and so forth. That's the problem. The reason that cycling and walking are unsafe in the United States has nothing to do, really, with the intrinsic unsafeness of walking or cycling. It has to do with public policies in the United States that fail to give priority to walking and cycling. And this is a real tragedy because these two modes of transportation, ways of getting around our cities, are absolutely the best. They're the best for the individual because it gives the individual this physical activity, makes the person healthier, but it's also the best for society as a whole. They contribute nothing to global warming or climate change. They don't pollute the air. They don't contribute to noise. They don't contribute to traffic dangers. They save energy and so forth and so on. These are really the modes you want to promote to make your city livable. And yet it just seems in almost every American city, we do everything conceivable to give priority to motor vehicles and to neglect these two non-motorized ways of getting around our cities, walking and cycling. In the United States, it's been sort of the easy measures, this so-called the rail-to-trails movement, which is fine. I'm not at all against recreational trails for cycling and for walking. I think they're great. But our real problem is we don't provide the inner-city facilities to get to work, to get to school, to go shopping, to get from point A to point B on a daily basis for your daily travel needs. That is what is utterly and totally neglected in American cities. And if you compare that with the Netherlands or Denmark or Germany, something like 80% of the bike trips made in those countries are for practical, utilitarian purposes, getting to work, getting to school, going to the university, doing shopping, and so forth. And in the United States, we relegate cycling, for the most part, as sort of a recreational activity. And, oh, well, we'll put the bike on top of our car, drive out somewhere to the countryside where it's safe enough, and then we'll do some cycling out there. But we don't really provide very much in the way of practical cycling facilities within our cities to get to places we really need to get to on a daily basis. And I think we may need to make cycling something that is safe, convenient, and attractive for everyone. And that's only going to be possible if you really provide those integrated, comprehensive facilities for cycling and for walking, by the way. And the only way you're really going to do that is finally give traffic priority to walking and cycling. And that is something that is really difficult to do because the vast majority of Americans owns cars and drives cars, and they don't want to give priority to cyclists and to pedestrians. Once you're in your car behind that wheel, and once you're viewing all of life through the windshield of a car, you suddenly get transformed to this, I won't say monster, but at any rate, you certainly have a different view of life. And you certainly have no intention whatsoever in your car, when you're viewing life through the windshield, of giving right-of-way to pedestrians and to cyclists. And it makes walking and cycling, as a result, very dangerous. In the Netherlands and in Denmark and in Germany, almost every driver is also at some time a pedestrian or a cyclist. And so motorists in German, Dutch, and Danish cities are much, much more sensitive to the needs of cyclists and pedestrians. They're much more respectful of the rights and the needs and the safety considerations to avoid hitting pedestrians and cyclists. In the United States, most motorists never are on a bike, and they are rare as pedestrians as well. They haven't a clue the vulnerability of cyclists and pedestrians to all of these dangers that motor vehicles pose when pedestrians and cyclists are crossing the intersection or using the roadway in any way. And I think that is a real key thing. That is, because there's such a high percentage of people of all age groups, both sexes, of the entire segments of society, that everyone is cycling and walking, and therefore there's much more respect for cyclists and for pedestrians, and I mean respect also from the motorists, and that makes things safer as well.
In the U.S., where are the best efforts being made to promote bicycling?
Well, you're doing quite a few there in the Northwest, actually. Not quite as much in Seattle as they do in Portland. Portland certainly is one of the model cities when it comes to providing cycling. The best city is Davis, California. They have something like 20% of all trips in Davis, California are by bike. But, of course, that's rather a small university town. Santa Barbara does quite well as well. Madison, Wisconsin has a fairly high percentage of cycling. But the cities that I'm sort of pointing out, I would say they're sort of few and far between. There are certainly some very good efforts being made in many states around the country. Oregon is certainly trying very hard. California cities are at the forefront of trying to promote better cycling facilities. But I think the problem is that, again, in order to really provide those necessary facilities, and I'm not just talking about bike lanes, bike paths, I'm also talking about traffic calming of neighborhoods, giving priority signals at intersections, that all of those policies require, to some extent, slowing down car use or giving less space and less priority to car use. And I think most Americans are so, what is the word? I'll say it, addicted to their cars. They don't want to give up the priority that is currently given to car use. They don't want to give up a lane of their roadway so people can bike on a separate bike lane. They don't want cyclists to get advanced green lights like they do in Europe, because they want to be through the intersection as fast as a cyclist. And so that's a real key consideration. I think also many motorists don't want to be slowed down. They want to be able to drive through their residential neighborhood as fast as they can. They don't want to drive through at 18 miles an hour. I think this is outrageous, because there is absolutely no question whatsoever that by allowing those sorts of high travel speeds in residential neighborhoods, you are going to kill and injure people. And it's a trade-off. And Americans, unfortunately, I think, have said they put more emphasis on speed and getting from point A to point B. They think that's more important than the safety of their children in those residential neighborhoods. And because their neighborhood streets are so unsafe, because cars are zooming through them, they then say, well, we don't want our kids to be playing in the streets or cycling on the streets or walking on the streets. And so then they're further disadvantaging their children by taking away that very valuable form of physical activity. And do you know, by the way, speaking of really important consequences of this, the rate of childhood obesity in the United States has quadrupled. Not doubled or tripled, has quadrupled. I mean, the parents are condemning their children to a lifetime of unhealthy living, of every conceivable disease, diabetes, hypertension, you name it, by not supporting the sorts of policies that we need to implement to make walking and cycling safe and convenient and attractive and feasible ways of getting around our cities. And instead, what do parents do? They chauffeur their kids to school. I see this in the schools around here as well in New Jersey, that the biggest traffic jam I note around 8:30 in the morning or so is parents chauffeuring their kids to school, not only creating all sorts of traffic dangers by adding to the amount of travel on that roadway, but also stealing, robbing from their children that physical activity that would help them not become obese, that would help them not get diabetes, that would help them not get hypertension. I think parents in the United States, I know this is a controversial thing to be saying, but I think parents in the United States are absolutely unconscionably irresponsible in the way they treat their children in this respect. They're stealing from their children the mobility, the independence, and the physical activity that would let them become truly healthy and sort of self-sufficient individuals and help them sort of learn to discover their cities by foot or either by cycling as well. And instead, parents are the ones who are responsible for their kids becoming obese and for getting diabetes and all of these other problems, in addition to which, by not supporting policies that promote walking and cycling, they're adding to the air pollution, issues of global warming, climate change, the depletion of non-renewable resources, and so forth. People, they're so addicted to their cars, they just can't imagine life without a car. But let me tell you, it's like being addicted to a deadly drug. And in the end, we're going to really have to pay a huge price. And I don't mean just a dollar price. I'm talking about a price in terms of personal health and public health. People are dying because we're not getting this physical activity. It really is a matter of life and death. People are not getting the physical activity they need to be healthy human beings. And one of the reasons is that we are so addicted to our cars and so hesitant to give the sorts of public policy priority to walking and cycling that we make walking and cycling either impossible or unsafe, and it just forces more and more people into their cars. And I think it takes individual parents, it takes individual voters to insist that public officials devote not just the money, but also the sorts of priority that's needed in order to give walking and cycling the sort of safety and convenience that they deserve.
Could you amplify on how it's best to change people's attitudes and therefore their actions in regard to transportation?
I think the best way really is to show that it is in their own personal interest to do this. That is, every single parent, and even if you're not a parent, every single American has a selfish interest, in a sense, to improve conditions for walking and cycling. And I don't mean just, I mean, there are obvious reasons as well. Everyone probably thinks, oh, well, you know, it's better for the environment. We save energy. It's better for our cities. It makes cities more livable, more sustainable, and so forth. But I think we also need to tell people how good it is for them right here, right now, and no matter how selfish it might seem, promoting more walking and cycling is going to give everyone more options. Rather than making people dependent entirely, and Americans really are, it's about 95% dependent on private cars to get around for every conceivable kind of trip, no matter how short. Americans make something like 75% of trips that are less than a mile by car. In Germany, Germans make only 20% of their trips that are a mile or shorter by car. We truly, as Americans, are addicted to the automobile. We don't even think of walking and cycling, no matter how short the trip might be. And there really are health consequences for this. So to get back to your original question, how do we convince Americans to change their travel behavior? I think one way of doing it is to try to inform Americans about how important walking and cycling are for public health and for their own personal health. If they want to live healthier, if they want to live longer, if they want their kids to live healthier or longer, it's about time that they get up off their rear ends and start getting involved politically and to support the kinds of policies that are necessary to get those bike paths and bike lanes in there, to put in good sidewalks, to traffic calm their neighborhoods, to get cars out of the centers of cities, and so forth and so on. These are the policies that are necessary. Again, there's nothing intrinsically unsafe about walking or cycling. The reason that the Dutch and the Germans and the Danes walk and cycle 10 times more than Americans is because their government officials provide those very good, safe, convenient facilities for walking and cycling, and that is why they walk and cycle more. It's a matter of European cities having the sense, truly the sense, to provide those safe and convenient facilities for walking and cycling that really make walking and cycling safe and convenient no matter how old you are, no matter how young you are, no matter whether you're a man or a woman, no matter what your economic background or social background or ethnic background. If you look at those European cities, if you go to Copenhagen or any of these European cities, you will see everyone cycling, everyone. And if you go to an American city, you'll see a few sort of young men cycling, and that's pretty much it. And I think that's indicative of the policy. I have a little sort of rule of thumb here. If I go to a city and I see lots and lots of elderly people cycling and lots of women cycling and lots of children cycling, I say to myself, that is a great cycling city. They have policies that make cycling safe enough that women and children and the elderly feel it's safe enough to cycle. And if I go to a city and I only see young men cycling, I'm thinking that city is not doing the right thing because only young men think it's safe enough to cycle.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Okay, I'll leave the following message. There was a study done for the British Medical Association, and what they found is for every hour you spend walking or cycling, you add more than 1 hour to your expected healthy lifetime. That is your lifetime without a major disability. Let me just repeat that. For every hour you spend walking or cycling, you add more than 1 hour to your expected healthy lifetime. And I would encourage every single listener in your audience, if you want to live longer, if you want to live healthier, get out there, walk and cycle, and maybe even first, though, the first step, get politically involved and make sure that your state and local officials are putting into place the kinds of policies and programs and provisions to make walking and cycling safer so that not only can you walk and cycle more, but that as you walk and cycle, you feel safe doing so.
Well, thanks so much for being here, John.
It's my pleasure.
We have just been speaking with John Pooker, professor in the Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy at Rutgers University. For more information, check on the web at www.policy.rutgers.edu/faculty/Pooker, that's P-U-C-H-E-R, .html. Again, that's www.policy.rutgers.edu/faculty/Pooker.html. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.